Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here as our wild week continues. Of course, today we're going to talk about the latest on the Twitter acquisition. We do have quite a bit of news that has happened throughout the day. We'll talk about that. And then we've also got some developments for Tesla, I think, that are underrated, not getting enough attention. So interesting stuff there as well. We'll start off with Twitter though, and quick look at the stock as well first. So down 3.5% today. The NASDAQ started off rough. Tesla was worse. I don't think it really ever recovered throughout the day, though the NASDAQ did a little bit. NASDAQ down 0.25%. But Tesla down 3.5%, closing at $2.40.81. Twitter today also dropped a little bit. Not that, you know, we're not going to talk about Twitter every single day, but in the midst of this deal, we kind of have to. Twitter today down a little bit as well. The market pricing in right now, about a 5% discount on that deal price. So just a little bit more uncertainty creeping in throughout today on the deal. First thing, before we talk a little bit more about that, though, of course, we've been, as you can see, this live stream a little bit later in the day today. We've been waiting to see what would be going on, if there would be any Form 4s from Elon. We did get a Form 4, but not from Elon, actually from Zach Kirkhorn today, just selling 3,700 shares. Not a huge number for him. This is effective on a 10b5 trading plan. So that's a, you know, pre-scheduled sale. It just so happened to be today when we're all kind of waiting for this. You know, pretty funny to refresh and see a Form 4 and it to be this. So this was pre-planned back in July, on July 29th, but no Form 4s from Elon. We did get a Form 3 from Joe Jebbia, the new board of directors member, just disclosing his, you know, current stake in Tesla, just 111 shares, but obviously he's going to be compensated more than that, and that'll happen next year. So as of right now, as I'm recording, you know, 10 Eastern time, 8 Pacific, we don't have anything, or I guess 7 Pacific, we don't have anything from Elon as of yet. Hopefully we're through that period where it would show up. You know, maybe that changes still later tonight, but hopefully we're through that filing period with no Form 4s, which would mean Elon did not end up selling on Monday unless there's a delay in that filing for some reason, which would be a violation. So it looks like right now, no sales from Elon. Sure, there still could be sales on Tuesday, but, you know, with that news happening, you would have expected Elon to have already been selling before that offer went through, just to get it, you know, out of the way. So as of right now, it doesn't look like we're seeing further sales from Elon. Obviously, that could change based on whatever transpires, based on equity commitments. Maybe Elon still has to determine the certainty of those things. But as of now, no sales. So I think that's a positive. Hopefully, you know, we'll see a little bit of reprieve in the stock tomorrow. We'll talk about some of the reasons why that may not be the case. But first, just to kind of go through where we're at on this acquisition. So we got an update from the Chancery Court this morning, basically saying that the parties have not filed a stipulation to stay this action, nor has any party moved for a stay. So the Chancery is just here saying, hey, I haven't heard anything. We're going to proceed as planned. That was this morning. There are some still updates throughout the day today. We do have the Wall Street Journal reporting that Chancellor McCormick has requested Elon and Twitter to come back to her by the end of the day today with a potential plan that would allow litigation to be dropped, according to a person familiar with the matter. So end of day today, who knows when that'll be? You would think end of business, but sometimes in circumstances like this, it can be really any time. They're also reporting that Elon and Twitter did try to potentially have discussions around a possible lower price deal earlier on. Those talks kind of fell off, and then Elon came back with this full price, you know, initial offer. So they did have those discussions. And then the other update here from the Wall Street Journal is that there was hope that a deal could be reached today or yesterday, averting a trial, which is supposed to start on the 17th of October. There is some potential progress that they have said, or in a sign of potential progress, the two sides have agreed to delay Elon's deposition. That was supposed to be on Thursday. It appears that that has been agreed upon to push back, at least, even if there is no formal stay with the court yet. So I'm sure we'll hear a little bit more on that tomorrow. In terms of Elon and the stock and, you know, residual concerns that people may still have, it's really about, does Elon need to sell anything still? And those concerns, at least through part of the day today, seem to be heightened by some reporting by Reuters. So Reuters here talking about how Apollo and Sixth Street no longer in talks to finance Twitter deal. People then, you know, concerned if, okay, does this mean debt financing is dropping out? Is this equity financing dropping out? Does this mean that Elon's going to have to make up that difference? So I just wanted to look at the chronology of these, you know, two companies, these two investors, and just level set where we're at with those two specifically. Because what we're hearing here, Reuters is basically just calling around trying to get any information they can from any of these potential partners. And, you know, this is what they're hearing. So, again, looking at the chronology, back on April 18th, so this is like right before we had the update from Elon, the 13D, that announced the equity and debt financing and the margin loan, we got a report from the Wall Street Journal saying Apollo Global Management is considering participating in a bid for Twitter. Okay, so they're considering participating. Then we've got on April 20th, 2 days later, the commitment letters in terms of the debt and all of the equity stuff. You know, not the equity partners, but in terms of how the structure of the financing would be. So you've got the debt letter, the margin loan commitments, the equity commitment letter. So all this stuff happened 2 days after we had this rumor from Wall Street Journal. A couple weeks after that, May 4th, we get another 13D. This went through all of the equity financing. So $7.1 billion lined up from this group of equity investors. And here we can see, you know, no Apollo Management, no Sixth Street included in the $7.1 billion that was committed. So even though they're talking about Apollo, they're talking about Sixth Street, they're not included in the debt offering, which we can see those partners here. And we can see that Sixth Street and Apollo Management not listed. And same thing with the equity investors. So even though we have reports here that it looks like somebody dropped out, this was a party that was never in the deal in the first place. They were just someone that was considering it, but not, you know, on board with anything that we'd heard so far. The last piece on this is that after, so this was on May 4th, after these equity investors were lined up, we did still have rumors that Apollo was planning to do $1 billion in partnership with Sixth Street and maybe some other firms. So I point that out because, you know, there's still a little bit of a gap here between that, you know, $12 billion or whatever in equity commitment, which rose to $24 billion. Some of that's coming from Elon, some of it coming from equity investors. There's still a little bit of a shortfall there. We've talked about that being $2 to $5 billion. Maybe Apollo could step in and fill that gap. Maybe that's something that Elon had been anticipating during his last round of sales. And if they're now saying that, hey, we're not doing that, maybe that would cause Elon to have to make up that gap. But there's a lot of maybes in that statement. There's a lot of speculation wrapped into that. And even still, it's $1 billion. It's, you know, I think I said this yesterday, like $2 billion. In the scope of this deal, in the scope of Elon's share count in Tesla, those amounts just aren't really all that significant. Yeah, maybe it's a little bit of a disruption for a day or two, but no major concerns around these amounts. So hopefully that clarifies what's going on with that. I think that caused a lot of, you know, concern today. I think the other thing that's causing concern is, why has Twitter not accepted this deal yet? Is Twitter going to continue to push litigation? If so, is there some scenario where Elon's debt backers back out and then Elon has to come up with the remainder because of what the court ends up ruling? So that's a scenario that seemed to have gained traction based on this, because people, I think, thought that this was a debt investor dropping out. From what I understand, not that I have a high level of confidence in this, but from what I understand, it seems as though the debt commitments are pretty firm. Just like Elon can't just back out of this deal, I think it's a similar situation for the debt investors. I don't think they can just choose to back out either. They've signed those letters of commitment. I'm sure they could take it to court and argue that because of all the things that Elon has done, they have the right to drop out. That scenario wouldn't necessarily surprise me. But I don't think they can just, of their own volition, just say, hey, we're done, and walk away without any, you know, litigation or anything like that. And then you still have to get to the next leg of it, of Elon still being forced to do it. Of course, there's that $1 billion buyout clause, and that's probably why Twitter's being hesitant to, you know, quickly move forward on this, just trying to make sure that they have all their bases covered. And that's probably, you know, all those things all rolled up. That's kind of why we're seeing, I think, the slightly lower price for Twitter today. So again, that's kind of where we're at. I'm sure we'll have more news on this tomorrow. I'm sure these conversations, negotiations, consultations with lawyers are ongoing, even as we're recording here late into the evening. So I'm sure we'll have more on this tomorrow. But let's move on from Twitter, at least for now, because we do have some pretty big news here for Tesla as well. This is something we talked about last May 2021, so like a year and a half ago. We talked about it in June as well, and I really haven't seen a lot of coverage outside of the podcast on this. So Reuters today reporting that the EPA is expected to propose electric cars be eligible for renewable fuel credits. So this is actually a pretty huge deal. Let me flip one second here. So They're saying that the EPA is expected to propose that EVs become eligible for renewable fuel credits under the Renewable Fuel Standard, the RFS. This has pretty much been historically biofuels, biomass-related credits. It's, you know, for renewable energy, but with that biomass or biofuel as the fuel source. So the White House is apparently supposed to be approving the new standard within the next 2 weeks. And I think a formal announcement, or at least they've been proposed, the EPA has been ordered to propose rulemaking changes for next year by November 16th at the latest. So, you know, next couple of weeks would be about a month before that. We'll see if maybe the White House gets it and then we get it like a month after that. But from what it sounds like here, the EPA is going to move forward with a plan that would be highly beneficial to electric vehicle makers and to Tesla. So just as kind of a refresh of what we talked about, I'm going to link to that episode down in the description today because that's really going to give the best overview of what we're even talking about here with the renewable fuel standard. But just to kind of give the real quick cliff notes here. So this is how renewable fuel standard credits work right now. Basically, renewable fuels that are produced have attached renewable identification numbers. Those can then be combined with non-renewable fuels to get those non-renewable fuels up to a certain threshold in terms of their percentage, you know, mix here with credits or non-renewable fuels. Those become blended fuels, and that all creates a market for these renewable identification numbers. So those sell on the market, they're like $3 a piece for each RIN, depending on which credit level they're at, which again, we talk about in that episode. But under the previous standard, 22.5 kilowatt hours of electricity is what would generate the equivalent of one RIN. Unfortunately though, for Tesla, those kilowatt hours must be produced from renewable biomass because the legislation basically, or you know, the rules, regulations, define a renewable fuel under this system as something that's produced from renewable biomass. So technically, if Tesla was like charging a vehicle with fuel produced from a renewable biomass, that could be eligible. As we talked about in that last episode on this, I emailed the EPA and they said, well, we don't really actually have a way to track that. So even though technically you could, there's no avenue to doing that. So that's the problem with the current one. The Reuters back in July or June had reported that Tesla was seeking changes. They reported that the current administration was working with Tesla on how to adapt this when these changes do come. And it sounded like there was really positive progress on that. So that's what we were talking about back in June, like how this could be such a huge deal. This is a huge credit market. So in 2021, this was an article from last year. I don't know what it ended up being. Unfortunately, I haven't found updated data on this. But there was an article at the time saying that that credit market could hit $30 billion in 2021. And you can see here the historical levels that it's been at. So this is a multi-billion dollar market. Obviously, Tesla would be extremely well positioned in terms of, you know, what they can do with this if these changes do happen. Now, how that looks, we don't really have any idea. Maybe that's based on consumption on the vehicle's part. Maybe it's based on production from solar, maybe both. We really don't know. So there's a lot of opportunity for Tesla here in, again, a huge, huge market. So definitely recommend going back to watch that other episode, again, linked in the description. But hopefully that gives a good context for how important this can end up being. You know, this on the heels of the Inflation Reduction Act, where you've got the EV tax credit, you've got the advanced manufacturing production credit for batteries, and then potentially you've got access to the renewable fuel standard credit market here. These are all huge tailwinds that the market right now can't really fully price in because we don't know all the details of them yet, but all these are going to be hugely impactful, you know, for as long as they are in existence, which likely a long time. So again, underrated, underappreciated at the moment, but will have a huge impact. All right, last couple of things here. So Elon today, just a note on FSD. So Tesla has pushed a new version of FSD. So I believe this is FSD beta 10.69.2.3 right now, if I got that right. So it's just a small iteration, probably, you know, error updates or things like that on 69.2.2. Elon saying that 69.3 will actually be a major upgrade. They're just keeping the .69 for the fun of it. Not surprising. But yeah, we do have just that minor update today. We do have an update in price target from Mizuho Securities. They previously had a $392 price target post-split on Tesla. They've dropped that down a bit to $370, but obviously still significantly above where the stock is trading at today. They do say that they continue to see Tesla as the global leader for EVs for the next decade. They believe Tesla continues to execute well with upcoming ramps at Berlin, Texas, while Tesla is eligible for the $7,500 EV credit. Obviously, we still need to wait and confirm that when those final regulations come out. But the reason for the decline is that they have slashed, not slashed, but trying to be dramatic about it. They've reduced their estimates through 2026, you know, just by a couple percent per year, it looks like. All right, next, I just wanted to share some more thoughts. I've been thinking about this Tesla replacing ultrasonic sensors thing. And I mentioned yesterday that I would have liked to have seen Tesla wait until some of these other features were developed with vision only before making this changeover. And I realized that was probably a pretty stupid thing to say because Tesla probably tried to do that. Remember a week or two ago, we had talked about how there was this September 30th deadline for Smart Summon to be completed with vision only. Obviously, we have not seen that. But if we put that rumor combined with this changeover, you know, together, Tesla clearly was trying to make sure that these things were ready by now. And unfortunately, they just missed that deadline. But obviously, they need to plan for things like this in advance. They need to change over at some point. And that needs to be pre-planned. You can't just all of a sudden stop doing this and not have any inventory on these ultrasonic sensors. So I'm sure Tesla had the best of intentions. And it's a good reminder that we can sit here and say, oh, Tesla should have done this, should have done that. You know, oftentimes I'm in that role. But, you know, we don't have all the information. And sometimes there's just context that should be considered that maybe we're not considering. So not that there's, not saying that Tesla is going about this perfectly or anything like that, but just wanted to share some of those thoughts as I've, you know, had them today. Ford, they have made the decision to increase the F-150 Lightning base price again. So previously this started at just under $40,000 when they had first unveiled it, and having sold none of those lower price vehicles, they increased it, $5,000, I want to say. Now we're seeing another increase up to $52,000 for that base vehicle. So it's a 30% increase from where the original pricing was announced at, again, having sold none of those vehicles. So I know, glass houses and stuff don't throw stones, but we've certainly seen Tesla announce prices and then have to raise them or, you know, not sell those lower price vehicles for a long time. But here we're seeing Ford do the same. And I think this is a pretty significant increase. And oftentimes what Tesla has done is just sold that higher trim for a long time that, you know, they did end up getting the $35,000 Model 3. It was short-lived, but it is a little bit different here for F-150 Lightning. Although, obviously, macro circumstances are not the same as they were a couple years back. Still, I think what this highlights is that there's been a lot of discussion around Tesla and demand and pricing and things like that. That conversation, while it is interesting for Tesla, and it's important for Tesla, it's much more important for everybody else. If Tesla starts dropping prices, other automakers aren't just going to be able to sit there and sell their vehicles for the same prices either. Tesla's got the most margin. Therefore, Tesla has the most room to come down on price. That makes Tesla's vehicles more competitive. That makes other automakers, that puts more pressure on other automakers and their pricing. If they start having demand problems, they don't have that extra margin to drop pricing down. So, okay, for Tesla, yeah, maybe we go from these projections of 32% gross margin or whatever, and that drops down to like 28 or 25 or something like that. Let's say 32 to 25. If Tesla does that, and other automakers have to match that, they could be going from, you know, a 10% margin down to a 3% margin, or a 15% down to an 8%. You're cutting your margins in half versus Tesla cutting it by, you know, 20% or something like that. So, while again, it is an important conversation for Tesla, it's way, way more important for all these other automakers. And if there is a softer market out there, that's going to be a concern for them, especially if costs stay high. And again, what we're seeing here from Ford suggests that maybe that could be a situation that happens somewhat soon. All right, last thing here. Elon Musk was on a podcast. This is published today. This was recorded back in spring of 2021. So I don't know why this was published today. It's about the XPRIZE Carbon Capture Project. So if you're interested in that, you know, there's some details on that. There's some conversation around SpaceX. I did listen to it all. Nothing really relating to Tesla, but I will link to that if you are interested in the description today. All right, I think that is where we'll wrap it up then. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you are subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast. And we'll see you tomorrow for the Thursday, October 6th episode, Tesla Daily. Thank you.